Ladies and gentlemen, episode 19 of Get Realisms.
The 19 crap.
Get Realisms podcast, ladies and gentlemen, episode 19. There's George in the background. He's going back upstairs. But I want to say, Christine, congrats on Vouet. On finishing it, getting it in the LA, in the Louisiana Film Prize. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Sensei. Yeah.
Crazy, right? Like I honestly didn't plan on that.
Making three features in a span of what? 3 months, right?
Yeah. No, three features in like a month and a half.
Shit, dude. And I never asked you, did you write a script for each one of them too?
Okay. So no. I was the AD on those.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so right. Okay.
All I did was AD.
Gotcha.
But Vouet was what I wrote. I wrote Vouet and shot it on our day off. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That was your day off shoot. Yeah. And that's the other thing too. You didn't take a break from that time.
It wouldn't have worked if I had thought about doing it later. If that makes any sense. Cause I happened to, here, let me share this real quick. Okay. Let me send this to,
okay. While she's doing that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for participating in this podcast. 19 episodes is ridiculous, but we did it, you guys. We're doing it, and 19 pure weeks of Adam and the Get Realisms podcast, along with Christine, participating in most of them. Some of them, I had to fly solo, and those were a little
boring.
Those were a little rough.
They're probably a little rough. Mine are just like all over the place. My favorite podcast was the one. All the podcasts that we've done when I've been on set have turned out better than I thought they would.
Because I'm the one who keeps us all on track.
I'm glad you do, because I would not have wanted to do a podcast on my only day off.
No, and I understood that too. So
yeah, I've been working like 14 hours.
Yeah, I don't mind steering the ship. You know me. I don't mind steering the ship. You just gotta tell me when. But I'm happy for you that you got Vouet out and you made it to LA Film Prize. That's crazy. I mean, it's not like you've never been there. That's a very familiar place, but it's nice.
This was exceptionally special for me because...
And it looks pretty, too. I mean, only seen like a screenshot, but it looks really pretty.
I shot it.
I know. That's why. It looks beautiful.
It makes me happy when people are like, who is the cinematographer? I was like, me.
Oh, that would be Christine Chad. Writer, director, producer, editor, cinematographer.
I was really happy about that because, I mean, everything I've done for the film prize has been like, I mean, besides my first film, A Bird's Nest still had a team. There was definitely a DP, at least. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was a crew. This one, legitimately, we did have a sound guy. Joined in at the last minute. But like, this legitimately was like me, my friend Carly, who's my second on the films, and she's just kind of like gopher type thing, doing whatever she needed to do, and then my two actors.
I was
very adamant that I wanted, if I was going to make another film for the film prize, I wanted it to be like how I used to make films, which is just with nothing.
Run and gun.
Yeah, and I kind of was inspired too by, I was teaching a class too. Luckily not during these three features, but during the other feature that was on prior to it, I was teaching acting students about just filmmaking, and that if you, the best way to take control of your career is to create content that matches what you want to be casted in instead of waiting to be casted in something. And so the assignment for the class was to make a short with your cell phone, to write a script that was, you know, at least 3 pages, but like less, you know, three to five pages. Some people went, you know, a bit more, and to utilize the resources that they have access to. And I was so impressed by the content and the scripts that these first-time writers were pumping out that it really gave me the push to do that for the film prize. Because I was like, you know, they're doing it. They're literally, yeah. some of them just got into some film festivals, you know, with their stuff that they created in quarantine with themselves, with just their iPhone. And that's the power.
That makes it inspiring. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the power of the stuff that we have access to, is that you can do that. And,
are nowadays, even with iPhone, you can shoot a 1080p HD video, you know, yeah. Pretty totally. Well, for the most part, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't do that 10 years ago. You couldn't shoot that on a Motorola Razr.
Yeah, you could do 4K. I mean, like, just the iPhone hacks. I use, like, Filmic Pro and some other stuff, and you can go in, change white balances, change...
Right.
I mean, and I was just like, that's how filmmaking was for me for a very long time. It was just me and camera and some friends. And... we get all caught up with getting bigger and better and like having the best equipment, having the best crew, having more talent, having stunts, and forget that like you can make a film with nothing. And it was cool to go back to that and to really think within the box. And there's something, a friend of mine said, there's like, you know, simplicity is the hardest thing to achieve well, I believe. And I agree with this.
Like simplicity in what's in frame?
Just the most basic, like, I don't know how to put it. But
oh,
like,
just the most like...
the most basic story or the most simple story or the most...
Like the bigger picture of it all.
Yeah,
the grand,
and simple... And
the grand
not,
idea. Yeah.
The greater, like... being able to do something well at the most fundamental, simple level, I think.
And seeing above that, right.
Yeah, is the hardest thing to do. And
I see that, yeah.
So, like, one of the things that I remember, this is stupid.
No.
From a reality TV show, per se. It was, like, Top Chef or some sort of, like, I watched these, like, cooking
Dude, I do too. I get stoned and I watch like hours of this and Animal Planet.
I know. And one of the things I always remember is one of the exercises that they had to do was they had to cook it was like a sunny side up egg perfectly as fast as they could. And they would count up how many they could do. Like, and that was it. It was literally cook a sunny side up egg perfectly.
Proper sunny side up. Yeah.
Yeah. In 1 hour, and then we count how many you could do perfectly. And that really stuck with me because that's what it is. It's how you can do the basics perfectly, consistently. And I think that's what separates, you know, someone who's been doing this for a long time, a veteran, a true professional from, you know, someone who's just starting. This is the ability. It's not like how fancier stuff is, how you can, you know, do the latest. It's really, it comes down to how well do you know your basics, you know,
with the resources that you have.
With the resources that you have. So that's what I felt.
It's a real Richard Linklater approach. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, this was an exercise in that.
Yeah.
It was what kind of story can I make with what I have in the most, you know, minimal way and minimal crew.
Right, without so much exposition,
Yeah, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we were like,
it looks like fun.
The only way I could convince my talent to work on their day off was to day drink the whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, it's going to be fun. It's going to be like you're off. We're going to accept you're going to be in front of the camera.
Backyard video.
Yeah. You can drink the whole time and we're just going to have a good time and like it's no big deal, you know? So
we're going to get riggedy riggedy wrecked while handling a camera. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it was. I mean, my lead, Thomas and I, we got like, I mean, we had some, yeah. So, and I'm operating the camera. I'm having a great time.
Right. And, which you're a professional and you know how to handle a camera for anybody who's like, that sounds reckless. It's not. She knows what she's doing.
I've been shooting for a while.
Yeah. She knows what she's doing.
I think it's a luxury to hire other people I would love to always be able to hire other people who are better than me. And there's plenty of people who are better than me, but I know how to shoot. I started off as a shooter.
But if it's like you said, it's simple enough and pretty straightforward. You know, there's no need to have some ambiguity, you know, there's no need to have any like hidden agenda or, you know, some sort of like, I'm sure there's a theme with, you know, what you're shooting, but it's not necessarily like you have to have so much exposition in order to fill in all that story. Because sometimes when you inflate something, it doesn't justify what you're seeing because it's almost like added fluff. It's like,
Yes, it's I call it things that distract, right?
The perfect example of this, and I do love the movie, but the one thing I hark on is Reservoir Dogs. You remember that movie?
Yes.
You remember the beginning when Quentin Tarantino talks about Madonna, the song Like a Virgin?
It's been a while.
Either way, it has nothing to do with the story. Like if Tarantino just cut that out and just had it open with, you just see all the guys walking down from the restaurant, you know, and it opens with Reservoir Dogs, like that opening sequence, like that works. You didn't need to have the scene before it of Tarantino explaining a Madonna song. It's just unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it's there. And I'm not saying like it shouldn't be there. It's history. Like I still love the movie no matter what, but it's interesting to have or watch a scene that is like, oh, what does that have to do with the story? You know, like, what does that have to do with the greater scheme of things? But yet you can argue that with any David Lynch film, but I argue differently, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about usually.
I don't know either.
But at the same time, it's like, you're right though, to have something simple and to have something just straightforward is simple just as rewarding as
simplicity. If you think about it,
for like any filmmaker,
all the high end brands are simple but done very well. Like, you know, like I've gone to these like really fancy, I don't know, like West Elm type stuff, and you just see this like pot, and it's like one color, and it's pretty, and it's exceptionally simple, but it's like selling for like so much.
Because I found that same exact pot at Target for $27.99. You know, it's just like, what? Huh? Yeah.
I don't know.
I get it.
I don't know what the metaphors I'm trying to go at.
I think I'm picking up what you're laying down, though. You could tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like simplicity is always in the form of what one person perceives as simple as another person who perceives it as simple. For you, making a film is hard for any random dude down the street.
Right.
So the fact that you created something and created a product, that says a lot, you know, regardless how big the brand, how small the brand, big budget, low budget, it doesn't matter. There's even, and you've seen movies that are ridiculous in terms of budget that have the most simple story, yet shot for $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't make sense. And they had, like, they just pump it full of effects, like VFX and shit like that. It's like,
right.
Well, what do you have in the end? A story.
Right.
You right. have a story.
In the end, that's what it is.
Christine, that's what fundamentally a filmmaker is, a storyteller. Right. Story. And you're a storyteller, and just because somebody doesn't like your story doesn't not mean it's not simple.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, what it breaks down to when I was teaching my students is that, like, forget about the other stuff. Forget about what kind of camera you're supposed to use and who's supposed to do what and what it boils down to that people care about is, you're exactly right, is the story. And you can tell a story with anything. And
sometimes with no dialogue.
Yeah. Or sometimes with your iPhone or sometimes with, I don't know, but like it's all comes down to story. And it was just, I was very happy to go back to that and remember, hey, not everything that I do has to be
complicated.
It doesn't have to have stunts. It doesn't have to have 10 crew people.
Depth.
It doesn't have to
it
have,
it doesn't need to like, be Inception.
Yeah. It doesn't have to use the Arri Alexa mini, like, or the Red or
oh,
whatever.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like sometimes it can just literally just be me and the camera and some very good actors. I lucked out. Yeah. My actors were so good. So,
well, that's what makes
it,
right?
Funny.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Thomas. Well, I'd never seen Thomas act either. You have interviewed him.
Yeah.
Remember on the, I never,
three episodes ago. Yeah.
Never ever. Just knew.
But yeah, no, he's, and it's funny because there's just some people who you can get a sense for, you know, just by talking to them. And I definitely got that sense of like, he's a hard worker. And if you give him a challenge, he seems like the type of guy who accepts a challenge.
Yeah. You
know? And he seems like a guy who also has fun with this too.
Yes. You know? And that's
like,
the biggest
I
thing.
See the joy in his face as in your face. You both were just jittery and excited. I had to keep the two of you calm down.
And I need that. Like,
yeah.
I.
No, yeah, you're right.
ADing is not very creative. It's scheduling. It's keeping people on track. It's sometimes it can be because sometimes you get the director where you have to help AD. You actually have to help direct. But, and then I can get creative. But, like, most of the time it's just logistics, you know? It's crisis management and helping people communicate with each other. So the way I like to blow off steam is literally to create. And sometimes you just have to make a short film on your off day.
Yeah.
And drink with a bunch of friends.
And
say, fuck it. Yeah.
But I think the fundamental part about what you're talking about is the fun aspect of it.
Because yeah.
It's really
people forget fucking that. People get so salty. And I'm only going to say this because I know Jordan's on this on my Instagram to say, like, there's some salty ass camera ops out there giving me shit on set. but what it boils down to is it's just a love for films.
Yeah.
And sometimes we lose sight of that, I think, on these on these sets where you've been working on some bigger sets. You're used to a certain way of treatment or whatever, but like, well, it boils down to is just you're making a movie and it should be fun.
We're having fun. It's supposed to be summer camp. You're supposed to have fun with, you're creating, I don't know. It's like, it's a collaboration if anything. And you're just helping other people validate your story.
Yeah.
And they do it by proving, you know, what their worth is, i.e. art department, cinematography, lighting, whatever it is.
Meeting of the minds.
And then the minds coming together and making something fucking pretty, like a movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Give me a break, will you? That's the best.
With your friends that create as well.
And that's the best.
Talk shit about each other and you just work really hard.
It's so fun.
It's fun, man. I love it. I'm very proud of the team, and uh, I just I can't believe we pulled it off. I mean,
I'm proud of you, Christine. I mean, holy shit. The amount of work that you made, like, remember the beginning of the podcast this season when you were like, I don't know about work for me, man. Like, this is kind of scary. You did the Corman challenge.
Yeah.
Well, it was right after the Corman challenge. And you were like, I don't know. Like,
I'm just never going to work again anymore, Adam. And the next one was like, I can't do the podcast anymore.
I can't do the podcast anymore. I have 72,000 jobs.
I can't do it anymore. I'm working too much. Yeah,
but it's funny because you always do that to yourself. You always say that, and then out of nowhere you get hit in the face with not even just one job, sometimes multiple jobs.
I know. I'm like, oh my god, help. I'm stuck on a film set.
No, but it comes to show you that, you know, it's like humanity or the universe sending you a message, essentially telling you, like, dude, you're gonna work. Shut up. Like, you're never ever gonna stop. Like, no one will ever put restrictions on Christine Chen and what she wants to do. Like, that doesn't that's not how it works. Yeah. And you're just making shit. You're making shit happen. Making movies.
And to a little bit of a way, like, what it came from.
And you never become a sellout either. You know, you're just Christine. You're just happy to be here, and you just want to make movie stuff. Magic.
Yes, I just want to make movies. Yeah. It started off where I was sitting at the production office table, which is this long, big ass table in John Schneider's studio, River House, and the director, David Bush, was like, you know what? I know a perfect way to save money on like the next time when we make a shoot, I'm gonna write a whole scene where we literally just push in on a cup of like whiskey and you hear the entire dialogue in the background and that's it.
Oh wow, that's pretty profound.
And I was like, I like that,
yeah.
I like that. So I kept thinking of that image and, like, what can I do that's kind of like that? It obviously morphed into something completely different, but it started off with that image of, like, a whiskey, a sniffer. Is that what it is? A sniffer of whiskey?
A growler, yeah.
A growler of whiskey. And I was just thinking of, like, what is happening, you know, type thing. And then I was inspired by... We have a lot of woods where we were. Mm-hmm. And I was inspired by, like, our access to, we had four wheelers, we had RVs and stuff, and I was like, you know what, I can make something out of this.
And the access something. Is
yeah, I just wrote
beyond. That's really cool.
Yeah. You know what's cool?
Mm.
So I showed my, to my, I'm glad he told me to, but my leader, Thomas, pushed me to show it before the screening of John Schneider's, like, rough draft of his film, which was a feature. And it was him, Glenn Morshauer, who's been in, like, so many movies, and some other people. And they finished watching it, and John goes, hey, why didn't you burn down an RV for reals? I was like, because I don't have one. He goes, right. You can burn down one of mine.
That is amazing.
Isn't that the coolest thing ever?
That is really cool.
I was like, hold up. I want to, like, get this in writing. I was like, yeah. Are you sure? Well, because
you sort of said it yourself. You're like, it's a meeting of the minds. It's like, that's pretty cool shit. He thinks it's cool. You think it's cool. It's like, yeah. Why not do that?
Yeah, that's my favorite story.
That's amazing.
Is like, oh, here's my short. Like, yeah, I'm like, hope you like it. Hope it doesn't suck. And he legitimately was like, this is great. Why don't you
just give
you
a free
RV?
Pass to fuck shit up?
Yeah, I was like, seriously?
That's right. Light this on fire, Christine. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that must have been fun too.
Yeah, that was very cool to be able. Where he's like, yeah, go burn something down. I was like, oh, whoa. Yeah. So I thought that was very, very cool. That would be one of my best memories from the shoot. I just never expected that. Like, somebody just be like, yeah, who does that? It's like, hey, we, you know, cheated it so it looked like we burned down a house. And then someone's like, hey, this is great. Why don't you burn down a house? Burn down mine.
Yeah. okay. Sure. I guess. Yeah.
Sure. I guess I'll burn down your house. That's awesome. Are you sure?
Well, yeah, because it's not typically what you can do. And also, when you burn something down, when you like vandalize something, it doesn't feel good. Like, not for me, at least.
No.
Like, for a lot of people, it takes their aggression. And I'm sure when I was 17 years old, I would say, like, yeah, burn this shit down, you know? But,
oh, man, I gotta say.
Yeah.
I have I'm like a mini redneck inside. Like, I'm on this property.
Oh, we're little kids at heart, Chris.
I'm just
for
like
sure.
Four-wheelers all the way. And like,
and we're in an industry that enables that, too.
Yeah.
Do you understand that?
I'm just like, oh, sweet. Like, let's just burn stuff every day.
Yeah.
Every day, let's burn something. Because yeah. It's like not stuff that I can usually do, like, in my backyard.
Or you can think it on in a much bigger scale. I mean, like, look at Tenet. Like, I mean, fucking Christopher Nolan crashed an entire fucking plane. A real plane!
It's awesome. That's what I want to do.
I want to do that, like, too. But, I mean, like, I'm like, imagine that day shooting,
I would like
right?
to hear that conversation. I wonder if he had a similar one to me, where he, like, showed, like, he probably did it. They already knew he was good, so they just told him he could. But, like,
absolutely.
Wouldn't it be funny if the conversation was like mine, where he, like, showed them his proof of concept, and they're like, why don't you just crash the plane?
Yeah. That's like, well, can we do that? Is that cool? Like,
I would love that. I mean, I kind of already have that moment, but, like, one day.
But yeah, I mean, we're definitely in an industry that enables the childlike adolescent things that I love to death. Like, I mean, writing an action sequence, like writing a fight scene, is one of the most fun things that I've ever done, because like I get to see the beats and see how I can draw it out and use the environment, like smashing someone's head on like a coffee table or something like that. You know, it's just minor stuff like that. It's like, this is going to be wild, because it just tickles that WWE thing in my head where, you know, I just see like Hulk Hogan, like jumping off something and crashing onto the other person. Like, writing that is absolutely fun. So I can't even imagine just like having that actually come to life must be a fucking crazy thing.
It is.
So, it's cool. And for you to have that opportunity to burn a fucking RV down, sign me up, dude. Let's do
that. Right? I was good. I ended up we only burned a little part of it because the actual producers were like, are you seriously going to burn down an entire RV for a short film? And I was like, well, I got
why not?
But then they were like, well, we wanted to use that for our next film. And I was like, that's fine. I'll share.
you party poopers. Come on.
Yeah, I was like, fine. So, yeah, I didn't get to actually burn down the whole thing, but I did get to set it on fire a little bit, and to me, that was pretty great.
You still burned half more RVs than I did.
Yeah,
so.
I burned more RVs than anybody has, so.
Than most vandals. It's kind of funny, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so.
That's a lot of fun, though, dude. I'm glad you had a good time with it. Are you going back to Snyder Studios anytime soon?
Snyder's,
or
unless I guess when they if they're gonna, I know they're working on other projects. Right now, they're trying to clear out all the mess that we've made. I mean, three films in one location, that's a lot of mess.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. You have a pretty tight wrap out. Like, you don't let things fall through the cracks when it comes to wrapping out.
Yeah, but I wasn't
usually
the producer this time, so.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, fair
enough. If I was the producer, yeah, it would be tight wrap out. There would be schedules and protocol and everything would be laid out. But I wasn't this time, so I don't know how their wrap out was. but it was nice to be like, peace, like, not my department.
<Damn. laughs> Oh, that must be fun. Yeah, I can see why. But I'm back to writing. Okay. I was going to say, so you're back to work again?
Yes. I actually did a to-do list today. My next part two.
I need to do that.
Quarantine goal list. So I got to reapply to the ADDGA because some of my stuff didn't count, but now I have 4 feature films. So now they can't let me not let me in. So,
right.
And then I'm going to go back to writing. I have an idea cooking in my head for something else. Somebody was asking if I would ever consider doing like a thriller horror because those sell. And I have something in my head.
Yes! Yes! I love it. You know I love horror films and thriller films. So whatever you got, if I can read it. I'm your man.
I'm excited. I have some visuals and I don't know. We'll see. It's always exciting in the beginning, and then like you get to the second act, you're like, why did I do this?
Well, that's the thing. Like, so you know what's so funny, Christine, is that's what I'm going through right now. But I'm actually going through that with the third act. But what I did was I just realized I need to take a break.
Yeah.
I just realized I need to give myself, you know, I gave myself a week. And I'm back to it hard, but you know, it's very small at a time because I learned that I burn myself out. And then when I burn myself out, I build resentment towards what I've already written. So like the next day it will happen. I wrote 20 pages. I'm like, I want to cut these 20 pages. Like these pages don't work, you know?
Yeah. There is something about looking and staring at your work the whole time over and over again. You just lose perspective.
But you're like, I guess you have to knock that shit off because those could be valid ideas. They could be actually worthwhile. It's just when we see it at first glance, we don't necessarily have the same feelings we do at third or fourth or fifth glance.
Sure.
So I leave it alone, and then I come back to it, and if I still feel raw about it, I know that this isn't the only draft, and I can go back, and I'm going to just really flush out what I don't like and what I do like.
Yeah, and I think that's something that comes with definitely with experience. I had to tell this to a recent student of mine, a new mentee, and I was like, hey, she was like, she couldn't make it to the end because she was like, I keep thinking I'm going to write the wrong ending. And I was like,
yes.
I was like, that's totally fine. I was like, write any ending.
Right.
Write multiple endings. And sometimes when you start writing one, you'll feel that's wrong. Or you'll write something else and they'll combine to a better ending. Like
exactly. You know the next draft is going to be that much better. I was
like, you can't be precious. Like,
right.
You just need to get it out and at least you'll have an ending and it's okay if it's not perfect because I was like, you can be writing all the way while you're shooting. You can be writing, you know, it's not over until it's like marketed out and distributed and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Lynch also talked about this at length too. And he says the trouble about brainstorming and getting the ideas on paper and then actually shooting those ideas that were on paper, there's so many things that can happen, especially if it's your own script and you're directing it, and you have to be open for compromise. If you're not open to compromise, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So already you cannot be that attached.
Yeah, you can't.
Which is kind of a fucked up thing to think about because things just happen. Nature happens. Mm-hmm. And humanity happens and fate happens and there's some things that you just can't fix, but you just have to minimize that and understand what you got to compromise is what you got to compromise, and you can't lose focus and lose grip on, instead of like the stupid things that you love, just understand that no matter what, you're still going to get the story out no matter what, just because this exact frame isn't what you had in your head.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So you sort of have to like lower your expectations in a way, especially when you're directing, but not in a way where it hinders your creativity.
Sure.
But in a way that can call for compromise, and you're willing to compromise. Because I've definitely have seen directors that have just...
Yeah, but wouldn't it be great to just be like, I have to, like, I can't compromise on crashing this real plane into a building?
Oh, 100%. 100%. That is nuts.
I can't wait to get to that point where I can
I can't wait either.
I'll be like, look, dude, you don't understand. Like, if I don't crash this plane into the building, this
it
messes up the entire movie. It just doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't.
But I feel like you have that in your mind, though. Right, it's like because your scripts evolve and they expand and they get better. Like Fun Employment would be a completely different movie than it is now back in 2013 if you shot it now.
Right, it's true because I would have figured out other like
100%.
I would have had other kinds of resources and access to things. But yeah, that I mean,
yeah,
Terry, but that's. Yeah, that's just how it goes. It's just you utilize what you have. I think that's the best. Is you
and that's what you did in Vue. And
you utilize what you have. You look. That should be like an exercise that every like aspiring filmmaker should do. They should literally just sit in a room and be like, "What do I have in this room?" Write a script based off what you see in this in your room, and shoot it. And edit it, and that's it.
And sometimes it's just that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, most of the time it's just that. Sometimes we just, like, most people just overthink this, like I do. You know? Yeah. Like, I always think about it, and I'm like, how do they do this? How do they do that? Oh, you know, the composition and the sort of the theme, blah, 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 blah. It's like... You know, at the end of the day, it's just like what you have and what you made with it, with what you have, reflects.
As long as it ignites some sort of feeling and emotional response from the audience, like, and I think that's what made Vue
great
is that I wrote it so that it matched the resources that I had. I knew the script. Handheld was the way to go for this particular script. I wrote it for that because that's all I had access to. I shot it with a Sony A7S too, you know, and that's all I had. And I knew that like I would be the one shooting it. And so I structured the entire story based off of if I had a full day to shoot, you know, so daytime, and then it goes into blue hour, magic hour, blue hour. I utilized every single part of that day and I scheduled it that way too, you know? So, yeah, and I knew I had an RV. I knew that I had a four-wheeler. I knew that I had the woods. So from there on, it just happened, and it was fun. And I call these I guess I've been doing this for a while in terms of – I call these quick-fire challenges. I used to do them with Jason and Kelly a lot. Usually it was Jason would present some sort of script idea or something and be like, hey – I want to make this. And then, you know, it's a little bit like Dogma. Is it Dogma filmmaking? Or what is it where there was a whole period of filmmaking where that was the whole purpose was that. Yes. Is that called?
Was it called Dogma? It might have. Yeah.
Was it? It was a whole series of films utilizing.
Well, it was in a certain time period, right? Like, was it back in the 90s?
Yeah, what's it called? It is called, it was like, there's a lot of rules. Like, you can only use natural light, and you can only use, is it Dogma? It's not Dogma, is it?
But there is a term for that.
Yeah, what is that called? Gosh,
I don't know.
It is Dogma. Is it
Dogma 95?
Okay, yeah, Dogma 95. That's exactly what this was like.
Is it Dogma 95?
Yes, Dogma 95.
Okay.
Dogma, he's right, was a filmmaking movement started in 1995.
Lars von Trier. Oh, that's right. Yes,
and it's basically...
Thank you, Duncan.
...great films based on traditional values of story, acting, and theme, excluding the use of elaborate special effects or technology. Yeah. And it was to take back power for the directors as artists as opposed to the studio. I mean, I love that. That's essentially like what I did. Like,
yeah, there. You did.
Yeah, so the goals and rules. So shooting must be done on location. Okay, sound must never be produced apart from the images. Okay. I kind of broke one rule. It says music must not be used unless it occurs where the scene is being shot. I broke that rule.
The rules are meant to be there to be broken, sure. Christine.
Camera must be handheld. Good. Film must be in color. Good. Special lighting is not acceptable. Awesome. Optical work and filters are forbidden. I didn't use any of those. Film must not contain superficial action. I did not.
Superficial temporal action?
Yeah, like weapons, murders. So you couldn't do stunts. Yeah.
Really? That's, okay.
This is the film. Oh, I did. My film format wasn't 35 millimeter, but that's okay. Genre films are not acceptable. So, okay, I broke some of the rules, but essentially it was kind of
filmmaking is supposed to be rule breaking, right?
Because technically it can't be genre, and I definitely did put in a little bit of VFX in mine.
Well, the rules are meant to be broken, Christine, right? I mean,
but it's a semi dogma film.
Sure, it's a Christine Chen film. How about that?
Yes. So that's fun. It is dogma. Yes. So yeah. No. I don't know if anybody has questions about the filmmaking process or not. Since I see like,
well, I mean, I can give you a whole bunch of questions.
Okay, give me a question.
So the script that you're writing, the horror thriller, are you pre-writing this before you're sitting down in front of final draft and actually pumping the script, or are you...
Ooh, that's a good question.
Are you doing it Tarantino style and just starting from the beginning and saying...
I usually do that. I usually start from the beginning and just start writing.
Yeah.
I don't actually get into structure until I have something all the way from start to beginning. Then I go back and break what I wrote and see how well it fit into the structure. And how much I need to cut or change in order to make the structure more apparent. But yeah, I usually am a sit down and just write because I think in imagery.
Yeah.
And so I go in very much already knowing what I'm seeing. I can see scenes.
You see the frame.
I see the frame. Yeah, I see the frame already. And so it's just,
you just got to paint it. Just you just got to make it come alive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can see the frame. Like I see, and it's weird because I see bits and pieces of different images, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. That's, I think I would only, when I haven't just sat down and write, it's usually if it's something that requires a lot of research.
Yes.
So if it's like super factual, then I will do the research and then outline it out and then follow more of a traditional like structure type thing. So I have two scripts that are in various forms of writing that are based off of some facts and about things that I don't know anything about. So I had to do a lot of research, and because of that, it is very much like outlined like a book report almost, like, oh, this person in 1942, this happened, and this
type thing. Right.
But when it's like purely just imagery and just writing something that's entertaining or whatnot, I just write out what I see. Yeah. First.
And you're able to articulate it too, which
I didn't say. Well.
Well, no. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. But I sometimes...
Remember, I write for me. So
right.
That's why I never would say I'm a writer, because I understand it. I see it.
Yeah.
You know? So like, it doesn't have like character descriptions and that maybe like if I were to enter it into a script writing thing, like people would probably hate it and say that it's not very good. But I mean, En route made it into the Austin Film Festival second rounder. So, I mean,
that says something. Right? I mean, yeah. Regardless, if you think you're not a writer or are a writer, you still made all those features and short films happen.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I write for myself, and
that's the way it should be. Have you seen the movie Adaptation with Charlie Kaufman?
I have not. I need to watch it.
It's mind blowing. And yeah. it's like it taps into the creative brain, especially for writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing, maybe at first watch, but I watched it again last night, and I just realized how fucking genius the movie is after the second time watching it. The first time watching it, I was like, okay, it feels a little pretentious. I don't know. But then, like, the second time I watched it, I was like, oh. I am going through that. I am going through a self-hatred moment in my script where I think the script is bullshit and I should die, you know? Like, yeah, 100%.
100%. Every creator goes through that. Like, if not writing, it's in editing. If not editing, it's directing. It's like, why am I making this? This is stupid. Like,
yeah, and you just want to abandon ship? Yeah.
Is literally a cycle. It's like, this is amazing. I'm a genius. I suck. I'm the worst person, like, worst artist in the world.
It's like the worst acid trip. Yeah.
Yeah. It's you think it gets better. It doesn't.
It doesn't. You're going through this roller coaster. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. I don't know
if anybody on Instagram or Facebook, if you guys go through this, you should comment below. Whether you guys feel the same roller coaster of self-doubt and self-deprecation.
Well, because in Adaptation, I'm not spoiling it, but there was a scene in it where it was like he was sitting in a room and he's doing everything he possibly can to not think about writing while trying to write.
Yeah.
So like he's just like, I wonder what kind of muffin I'll have. Maybe I should get some coffee. All right, I got to establish the themes. I got to establish the characters. Maybe I should get banana nut bread. Maybe I should have another cup of coffee. You know, you just constantly inundate yourself with distractions that you just don't want to fucking write at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But you do. And I love it, you know?
You know what I've discovered? That if I go somewhere where I have no distractions, which means like usually just someone else's house, which is a new place, then I'm forced to write.
Right.
You know?
And because it's not an environment you know. Right. So
it's not like, oh, I got to do laundry. Oh, you know, right, I have to organize these papers right now.
I have to make a sandwich. Yeah. 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 Which is most of the time for me.
That's yours? I have to 100%. Make a sandwich?
100%. I'm just like, I could go for a nice bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch right now. And I just like can't walk my happy ass to the kitchen and I get myself, you know? But here's the thing though. I have this controlled chaos where I inundate myself with distractions, but they're good distractions. Meaning like I'm reading like a book, like right now I'm reading a book and I'm reading about, it's called Chaos. People who listen to the Joe Rogan podcast probably would know this, but it's about Charles Manson and how the CIA and the FBI were involved with the Manson murders and how LSD was a huge component in the Manson murders, like just between Tate and LaBianca murders.
Yeah. I knew LSD was big. Yeah.
There was no involvement of FBI or CIA in the police report. However, they had all sorts of involvement and they actually had all the police reports and footage and findings and evidence sent to Langley, Virginia. Yeah. Why would the CIA and the FBI need that kind of information?
Sure.
You know, so that's what the whole book is all about and it's nuts. And it's about like the ideology of manipulation and control. And that's what I feel like is nice distraction for me or watching a movie, you know, instead of like being on my phone, like now, like I turned my phone off from like 8 a.m. till about like 4 or 5. So no one's texting me. No one's calling me. No, unless it's work.
Yeah.
You know, that's different. But like, I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook. I'm just pushing that to the side. Even though like I go on Reddit for the news, I stopped paying attention to the news for the past week. Holy shit. I feel so much better.
Well, they say, I mean, it's your mind is a temple.
Yeah.
You have to make sure you control what goes into it, right?
100%.
If you're not filtering things that go into it, you can be subconsciously or consciously affected, and that will affect your productivity.
Because it drives you crazy. Yeah. You go nuts. Like, if I see one more thing about the coronavirus or Trump versus the coronavirus, I'm going to fucking blow my brains out. Like, I can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's now at a point where I'm muting all of that. And and I didn't realize how easy it was until I did it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it was the last podcast that we did. That day was the last day I was just like, you know what? Fuck the news. Like, this is just like absolutely horrendous. I'm not saying that I need to be blind by the news. I'm not trying to be ignorant, but I just want a break. I just need a break from the monotony of murder and evil that's casting around the world.
That's
and
not
of course,
asking too much.
It's not, because I mean, I'm writing a script that has evolved around evil, you know? Yeah. So it's not like I should be submerging myself into all this shit, you know?
It's a lot. I mean, when it I was is. Writing in Root and everything, it was about like suicide.
Oh
stuff,
man.
That was a lot.
I can't even imagine.
They're just reading form after form after form.
EMS like stuff.
EMTs,
yeah.
EMTs like,
or sorry. Yeah. EMT. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it puts you in a terrible mood.
Yeah. And then you read the news, right? Yeah. And it's just like, fuck, like, why did I do that? Because nothing good comes out of it. I flick on CNN and I'm like, oh, I made a mistake. I made a big mistake. Because now I'm just like, I'm 2 hours in and I'm watching Anderson Cooper and I'm just like, yeah, fuck all this shit. You know, and I'm just
a horrible mistake.
You know, so I learned to just shut all that off. And it's just like, oh, I see. I have control. I can't just say, oh, I don't need to pay attention to this, because I thought it was like a duty. You know what I mean? Like, as an American citizen.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, but I think you can block off times for that, right? I think you can just say like, hey, you know, I spend 1 hour figuring out what's happening in the world.
Right.
At this time. And the other time, I think that's okay to shut it off. You don't have to have it all go. It's the same thing with social media. It looks like I'm on it all the time, but like, my shit's all scheduled. Like, I spend a block of time on Sunday scheduling it all out. And then here and there, like while I'm working out or something, I'll reply to stuff. But like, that's about it.
It's nice to have a schedule, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe I should start doing that.
Hey.
Probably a good idea.
Do you. Whatever works for you. It just works for me that way. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And that's to have a consistency, like a thing, a routine that you have. Like, yeah, it helps.
Yeah.
Shit like that helps, especially like people who work out.
Yeah.
You know, and so, how it does to the mind.
Speaking of schedules, we are almost to an hour.
We are.
So I want to mention that people should go to watch the film during the virtual film festival, the Louisiana Film Prize. It's online this time, which is great because now anybody in the world can join and watch the Louisiana Film Prize. The film prize, what happens is you have to watch all 20 films. They have a system that basically unlocks after you've proven that you've watched all 20 films, and you can vote. And, if you want to support me and my team as a filmmaker, that's what you need to do is go during the film prize. It opens up on October 2nd to October 12th.
Website one more time, Christine. Was it?
October 2nd to October 13th.
No, the website.
Oh, LAFilmPrize.com. Yeah, so...
LAFilmPrize.com.
Yeah, I have it on my thing too. Oh, or PrizeFest.com/tickets.
Mm-hmm. PrizeFest.com/tickets. Okay. Yes. And it's on Christine's Facebook page. Or the Get Realism's Facebook page, right?
Yep. I'm also commenting on stuff right now. So
cool.
Yeah. So go and get your ticket. Go support some awesome filmmakers. There's a lot of great veterans.
And it is fun. I definitely love those film festivals. So if anybody wants, what is it, like a couple of days, Christine?
Yeah, it's so October 2nd to the 13th is when the full festival. You can watch, you have that full week to watch 20 films.
Yeah.
And if anybody is like dying to go, I have discounted tickets. So let me know if you want one. But you have to, because if I give them to you, that means that you're going to participate in the festival and you can't just like say you're going to and then not. So I want to make sure that whoever really wants to go.
Do or do not.
Yes. So if you're interested, I'm happy to provide some discount tickets to people.
Lovely. So yeah, that was, not LAFilmPrize.com. What was it? It's
PrizeFest.com.
PrizeFest.com/tickets, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Watch all 20 films. Vote for Christine Chan! Was there anything else you want to add, Christine?
No, that's about it.
Watch some movies, you guys. Take a day off. Relax. Do what I do. And just fucking watch some dope-ass movies. And watch some amazing Louisiana filmmakers make some darling films and watch it. Take a day, take the family, watch it, you know. Fun times, you guys. Ladies and gentlemen, that's been Get Realism's podcast again.
Get Realism.com. We never said who we were. You're Adam Chase Rainey, and
yeah, I'm but everybody knows who I am. No, you're right. I am Adam Chase Rainey.
I'm Christine Chen.
And this has been Get Realism's podcast, GetRealisms.com. Pick up your book today. Thank you, Facebook. Thank you so much.